Good evening, good afternoon, good morning. It's, as always, a huge pleasure to be with all of you and to be entering into our weekly conversation on the non-dual tantric wisdom of the Pratyabhijna Hridayam. And I just wanted to flag something that maybe some of you noticed as well, which is that there is something kind of wildly, interestingly coincidental about the fact that this week we've been discussing contraction, the process of contraction through the three malas, and this happened to be the week that the wild ride of the bull market in the American Stock Exchange contracted. And we are actually, those of us who have money in the market are getting to experience contraction, and especially getting to experience how this external contraction affects us inwardly, which is the very essence of what we're practicing this week as we look at Sutras 10 and 11. I'd like to begin by plunging right into our dedication, our mantras, and then into meditation. And then we'll begin to look into the practice with Sutras 10 and 11. And I want to say that these two sutras are really what the Tibetans call pointing out instructions. In other words, they are very precise instructions for understanding how to recognize the true nature of our consciousness and the true nature of our awareness by looking directly into our day-to-day experience. So this is going to be a class about looking into your own perception, which I have been finding extremely radical as I've been preparing for this class. I've been kind of floating around looking at the room in front of me and at the scene outside and my own internal processes and recognizing, or rather contemplating the recognition. I can't claim to be directly recognizing it at every moment. Contemplating the recognition that everything that's happening in my experience is happening inside the awareness called Chitti Shakti, Shiva, Kali. So it's quite a profound process as you enter into it. So let's find a comfortable, upright sitting posture. Those of you who are in a situation where you can safely close your eyes, if you're walking or driving, obviously you do this process open in an open-eyed way. And be aware that as the breath flows in, you can let the downward flowing breath, the apana shakti, bring your attention deeply into the base of the body and feel the support of the chair or the seat or the earth. And then with the exhalation, as the breath rises, feel the body rising. I should say that, because I know that this instruction I just gave might be slightly confusing to some of you, is that in the tantric understanding about prana, about the five forms of prana, the apana, the downward flowing breath, is associated with the inhalation. The prana, the exhaled breath, is associated with the exhalation. So when we inhale, we're bringing the energy and attention through the breath into the base of the body and becoming aware of the earth. And then when we exhale, that same process through the prana shakti, the rising breath, is bringing our attention upward through the crown. And in this, with this sense of being grounded in the earth and also lifted through the crown, feel the breath flowing vertically in and down and out and up. With the inhalation, ground yourself. With the exhalation, feel that you let go of whatever residue of the rest of your day may be contracting your consciousness. And we'll begin, before we start the chant, we'll begin by dedicating our practice to the enlightenment and the upliftment of all beings in all worlds, and asking that by the power of our practice, all beings be freed of suffering, that all beings find happiness and the causes of happiness, that all beings experience the sacred joy that lies beyond suffering, that all of us find our way to the equanimity that is untouched by grasping, aversion, or dullness, and that we know the equality of all that lives, that we know chitti shakti appearing as all that is. And with that recognition, we'll begin our chant.
Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute. Om Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute. Om Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute. Om Jayanti Mangala Kali Bhadra Kali Kapalini Durga Kshama Shiva Dhatri Swaha Swadha Namostute.
So as we have invoked both the grace-bestowing quality of Shiva, describing Shiva as that great consciousness that eternally performs the five acts, and invoked Chiti Shakti under her, several of her names as goddess. Let's also remember that in this process of Chiti experiencing herself as a diverse world, she manifests first as pure consciousness, the consciousness of the witness, then as the great plenum of Prakriti, which we experience as the causal body and the deep sleep state. And then she manifests as the instruments of perception, of knowledge, the intellect, the attention, the attentional quality of mind, and the egoic tendency of mind to divide experience into me and not me. And from there, she manifests as the whole energy system, the prana and all the different forms of prana, and then as the capacities to know experience through the senses, and then as the objects of the senses, including the so-called physical world. So right now we're going to give our attention to Chiti Shakti in her manifestation as the Prana Shakti, allowing the breath to flow in and out with the feeling that each inflowing of breath is entering you as a soft energy, a soft touch flowing into the front of your body, as though the whole front of your body is porous, and the breath is able to enter your body in the form of particles of subtle light energy, manifestations of Chiti Shakti. Through the breath as particles of subtle light energy. Feel the front of the body opening to receive and mingle its particles, its cells and molecules with the particles of prana. And feel the breath being drawn in as subtle energy through the whole back body. And see if you can find the sensation at the very edge of what you would ordinarily think of as the skin boundary, the apparent physical boundary between what you sense as my body and what you sense as outside your body. See if you can allow the breath, feel the breath as it flows in through the whole back body. To sense breath as this subtle, transparent force field, this field of light that is flowing through the apparent boundaries of your skin. Perhaps recognizing what the breath wants to show you, which is that what we call the physical body is a somewhat denser form of energy than the breath, but not different in kind. As you allow the breath to flow in through the front of the body, back of the body, perhaps through the sides of the body, then from above the body. See if you can feel how the breathing process dissolves your experience of physical density. Feel how each inhalation allows you to feel the boundaries of the body more porous, more open. And as that subtle, soft pulsation of breath moving from the space in front and the space behind through the porousness of the body, begin to feel that each breath dissolves a little bit more of that sense of density and replaces it with a sense of luminous subtlety. The transparent, translucent quality of breath. And as you allow the breath to flow in through the whole front and the whole back of the body, see if you can let go of the ideas of this is my body. This is flesh. This is who I am. Recognizing that this feeling of the boundary at the edge of your apparent body is actually a concept. It's made of thought. See if you can notice that as the breath flows in across the body from in front, it actually can seem to flow right through the body and into the space behind. Passing through this subtle, slightly denser energy that we normally call the body. Breath as light flows from in front through the space of so-called body into the space behind. See if you can feel how the breath can actually be experienced as a continuous flow, a pulsation, a movement. Visually, it can be experienced as light. Tactilely, it can be experienced as a kind of subtle touch. Notice how even as the breath flows as light particles into the body, softening the ordinary boundaries and the density that you might normally experience as the body. Notice how in this lightness, thoughts and feelings also become less dense. And just allow yourself for a moment or two to allow the breath to show you the incredible fluidity of your embodiment. So as we move into this really quite radical teaching, I want to just point out that what we're really being taught how to do in this study and what Kshema Raja is pointing to more and more deeply in these next verses is what it means to refine our experience of our own inner consciousness sufficiently so that we can directly realize the truth about ourselves and the truth about our own process. What the tantricas say is that once we start to realize this subtlety of the process that is living us, then our attitude towards life begins to become much more like the attitude that a very cultivated aesthetic spectator might have when watching a brilliant theatrical performance, or listening to gorgeous music, or looking at a painting. In other words, it becomes possible to recognize that this world that we are experiencing is actually a play. And this is, of course, this is a very, very refined and enlightened understanding. But I want to tell you a story that expresses this, which has come in very handy for me at certain moments in my life. My guru used to tell a story about a tantrika, a wise man, who went to a theatrical performance. And in the course of the play, two actors are having a sword fight with real metal swords. And the tantrika, who happens to be sitting in the front row, is very, very caught up in the fight. It's very skillfully executed. And suddenly, one of the swordsmen makes a gesture, leans down over the lip of the stage, and with his stroke, accidentally cuts off the tantrika's finger. And so the tantrika is, again, completely absorbed in the play. And he's sitting there, his hand is spouting blood, and he's saying, "Wow, what a master stroke, what a swordsman. That is so subtle, so skillful." In other words, in that moment, his admiration for the skill of the play, of the actors and of the play, overrides his experience of something bad happening to him. And obviously, it's a very extreme story, maybe never happened. But it illustrates an attitude, which is the attitude that Kshemaraja wants us to come to understand, which is a kind of wonder and rapture at the way this play unfolds. It's obviously harder to access that when we're in the middle of a violent conflict, or when we're physically suffering or wounded emotionally, than it would be for Kshemaraja, who was an enlightened sage living in the beautiful Kashmir Valley, probably living a quite comfortable life in the midst of natural beauty. So, we have to admit that his cultivation of rapture was probably easier for him than it is for some of us. But nonetheless, this is the gift of this teaching. And one of the things that he will go on to say that I know will make a lot of sense to many of you is that this cultivation of wonder at the play of Chitti Shakti in the world and in your life is much easier if you're able to feel devotion. In other words, if you have a sense of affection for Goddess, if you've cultivated that kind of devotion, then it becomes much juicier to look at her play in the world, in the same way that if you're, when you're in love or when you love your child, and you look at your lover's gestures or your child's, listen to your child's words, and you feel love. So it actually helps a lot in understanding this process to see the play of consciousness as the play of Goddess. It's not that all of you will naturally gravitate towards that kind of devotional view, and this text does not require that you be a devotional type of person. But there is a kind of a juicy unfolding that starts to happen as you tune into the transmission that comes through this text, which it is my wish will allow you to start to feel that uprushing of affection for the divine center that manifests as this universe and that which also lives in your own heart. As Kshema Raja moves into verse 10, he asks the question, is there some recognizable clue? Remember, we just finished talking about how the divine consciousness becomes a mala-covered samsaran, and an individual soul limited by impurities and wandering around in the field of samsara. So is there any means, he asks, some clue that indicates your divinity, even when you're in the condition of a samsaran? Is there a clue that will allow us to confidently say she really is God appearing in that state? And he says a resounding yes. And here's the clue. The clue is that even contracted, the soul is performing the five great acts of consciousness just as Chitti does, just as Shiva does. So the verse says, Tadapi Padvat Pancha Krityani Karoti. Even in this state, even then, is what the Sanskrit says, like Shiva, he performs the five acts of creation or manifestation, sustenance, dissolution, concealment, and bestowal of grace. So, just a couple of things here. Kshema, in his commentary, is very quick to point out that this idea that we can recognize our divinity by the fact that we perform the actions that God performs is a classically and radically tantric notion. Because in the other great non-dual tradition of India, Vedanta, Advaita Vedanta, the idea is that the absolute God is actionless, is a pure witness, does nothing. And so the corollary of that, as many of you know, is that in classical Vedanta, the goal is, to some large extent, to free yourself from any belief or any idea that action or movement is necessary. In fact, there are some Vedantic teachings that say, you know, since you are already the self, since you are already pure consciousness, why do anything? So this Vedantic understanding, which, of course, is, you know, as Chris Wallace says, it's been thoroughly tantricized in modern times, so it's very hard to find a pure Vedantin these days. But nonetheless, people who practice Advaita Vedanta, in whatever way they do it, will tend to subtly or, you know, not so subtly, denigrate life in the world. And of course, this is a problem if part of your goal in life is to improve the way human beings and animals and plants experience life on this earth plane. The great eco-activist Joanna Macy tells a story about how she was on her way to an anti-Iraq demonstration in 2003, and anti-Iraq war, I mean, not anti-Iraq, when she ran into a friend in the streets of Berkeley, California, and she told her friend where she was going, and her friend said, why are you doing that? I mean, after all, it's all Maya. And Joanna Macy said, first she was a little pissed at her friend, and then she realized, well, this is one of the ways that spiritual people see the world. They believe that consciousness alone is real and that the world is not so real, and therefore action in the world can be seen as rearranging the deck chairs on the Titanic, as one of my friends says. So again, Tantra is not like that. Tantra is really concerned with recognizing the physical world and your own life as the arena within which Chitti Shakti manifests her divinity as play. So that's why action, activity, the fivefold act, is the clue that we're offered to find our way out of contraction. So this is actually very significant. And, you know, we've talked, of course, about the fivefold act, the five eternal functions, which consciousness is always manifesting. And, you know, again, in this cosmos, at every level, something is always manifesting, being sustained for a while, then dissolving. And remember, when it dissolves, it doesn't get destroyed, because energy can never be destroyed. But it's, you know, things are constantly appearing for a while, being sustained, and then disappearing. Whatever it is, cultures, civilizations, our human life, forests, oceans, cultures. The Buddhists call this impermanence. And they say that the fact that everything is always changing like this is the cause of suffering. The Tantrikas call it Shakti. They call it the play of Chitti. And they say that the fact that it's always changing is what makes it so entertaining. But of course, the most interesting and important part of this teaching is contained in the tantric understanding of the other two acts of the fivefold function, which from our point of view really are the most crucial. Chitti constantly conceals herself. She conceals her subtle presence within the quarks and subatomic particles and spaces in the material world, and behind the thoughts and concepts and breathing patterns of our own inner sense of identity that create our sense of identity. And this concealment process is the fourth act. It's called Vilaya or Tirodhana, the act of cosmic concealment. And then, of course, there is the fifth act, which is called Anugraha, wherein Chitti literally takes off her mask and allows our mind and senses, which are, again, her, to experience the unity behind this world. And, of course, it's a very important part of Tantra that we understand that concealment and revelation are her intention. They're acts of hers. In other words, not ours. We didn't cause ourselves to fall asleep to unity. We're not stupid. It's because in the process of appearing as all this, she naturally conceals oneness. And, you know, we kind of have to say this again and again. And that concealment implies the fifth function, which is that she can choose at any moment through your process of perception to show you herself as the universe and as you. As Chitti exhales universes into existence and sustains them for a while and then dissolves them, she is actually using your perceptions, your process of perception, as the, let's call it, the paints and brushes, the materials with which she organizes the so-called external creation. And this is true of every level of our experience. And what Kshemaraja wants us to get, what he wants you to experientially grasp, is what it means to say that it's not you as an individual who performs actions. It really is Shakti, the only actor in the universe, who is making your life happen, manifesting all this through your mind and senses, and through the minds and senses of the zillions of other living beings whom she's acting through in this tapestry that is your play. So her magic trick, of course, is that she makes everything which is really inside appear as outside. And again, she's not doing something to us. She's not fooling us. We're not victims. She's performing these five acts as us, as us. Your mind and senses are not even yours. They're aspects of the dance of the Shakti chakras, who we're going to speak about in a moment. the wheels of energies who flow out of the heart of consciousness and manifest as a world. Obviously, this is incredibly counterintuitive because it is not the way things seem. It feels to us as though we are being acted upon by a world that is in every possible way different from us, which we maybe experience in meditation or when we're doing active sadhana as being connected to us and sometimes one with us, but which mostly seems to be separate and outside. Kshema says that the optical illusion of Maya obscures from us the fact that Chitti Shakti has manifested. I just keep saying this because it's what Kshema does. These are what are called pointing out instructions. She's entered into all the fields that we call the aspects of our experience. And if we really look at our experience, what we discover is that there is absolutely no way we can know that the objects that we are looking at are either outside us or separate from us and each other. And this, what I'm about to say, actually comes from the conversations that I hear at the Science and Non-Duality Conference that I attend every year. And actually what I'm about to say comes from a conversation that I heard last October between Deepak Chopra and Donald Hoffman, who's a very cutting-edge neurobiologist. And Donald Hoffman was saying very casually, well, of course we can't prove that anything is out, that anything exists independently, because we know that nothing can appear unless it is being observed. Since we can only know something if we're there to observe it, how do we know that it's actually outside us? And in the same way that just to call something separate is impossible, because if something is separate, that means we can act on part of it without affecting another part. And as chaos theory now tells us, I think all of us know this amazing image of how a butterfly flapping its wings in the South China Sea affects the movement of a tropical storm in the Atlantic. In other words, nothing is really separable. Actions in one part of our larger system affect other parts. This is something that is, though I acknowledge that no physicist or neurobiologist would approve of me, kind of adopting the language of science to explain a spiritual concept. Nonetheless, it's an interesting coincidence that science is now recognizing non-objectivity and non-separability. You know, one of the reasons why so many spiritual traditions say that this life is like a dream is because when we're dreaming, the entire action of the dream is taking place inside our consciousness. And when we wake up, we realize that. So the dream is a very, very useful metaphor for something that we can't see with our eyes open, which is that the whole thing is happening inside us. So let's just start by doing this as a meditation. And what we're going to do is look at the process of creation, sustenance, and dissolution as it takes place through our ordinary seeing, hearing, tasting, etc. So please open your eyes. And I'm going to ask you to move your body, so listen carefully. Don't space out during this meditation. So look at what you see in front of you and really be aware of it. Notice the details of it. The windows, the walls, the table, the computer screen, whatever. This is your process of manifestation, your srishti, your creation. Now, turn around so that you cannot see what you were looking at before and look behind you. Look in the other direction at the opposite wall. As you do that, you dissolve your previous creation. So what we've just seen is you created a scene through your perception by looking at it. You sustained that scene for a while by continuing to look at it. And then you dissolved the first scene by turning your attention someplace else, which made the first scene disappear, at least as far as you experienced it. This is how a normal human being replicates the process of creation, sustenance, and dissolution through the act of seeing. Now, how does the individual perform the act of concealment? Obviously, for most of us, there was no recognition that the scene that you saw in front of you was part of your own consciousness, that the landscape in front of your eyes, the table, the walls, etc., the computer, is not a separate object, but is actually a manifestation of the incredibly subtle energy of Chitta Shakti. This is your act of concealment. Now, I'm going to ask you to do an act of giving yourself grace. Bring your awareness back on itself. Have the recognition of your own awareness. And you might do this by asking, am I aware? And then tuning into the subtle space that arises in answer to this question, am I aware? There's no answer in words, but you become aware of your awareness, hopefully. And now, as you look into what appears in front of your eyes, have the recognition, my awareness is holding all this. All of this is being experienced inside awareness. Now notice if there is a shift. If there's a softening, if there's a relaxation, if there's a sense of turning inside, there may not be. This is just a, you know, kind of a preliminary thought experiment. So that act of tuning into awareness and remembering that what you're experiencing is being experienced inside awareness is one of the ways that we give ourselves grace. And of course, in this situation, for some of you, there may have been an actual awakening that as you said to yourself, all this is appearing inside my awareness, there was a shift and it actually became a real experience, a realization, not just an exercise. That's the experience of cosmic grace, of Chitti giving you, so to speak, the experience of revelation. That is anugraha. So in Shaivism, in Tantra, grace isn't just the power of divine help, like being touched by an angel, as we sometimes describe it. Grace is what happens when the mask comes off reality. When we are able to actually experience the revelation that the world is being manifest, sustained, and dissolved moment by moment inside awareness. And what Kshema says, and what is, you know, Kshema says it again and again, is that we can't recognize this truth just by applying the intellect, although he's all for the intellect. The sages of Tantra are big intellectuals. So they don't deny the importance of intellect. But when it comes to seeing the truth about how this world is a constant display of the five acts of Chitti Shakti, the five acts of Shiva, we can't figure that out. It has to be a realization, a direct realization. Nonetheless, the intellect can take us some distance in this. Einstein famously said, a human being is part of the whole, called by us universe, a part limited in time and space. We experience ourselves, our thoughts and feelings, as somehow separate from the rest, a kind of optical delusion of consciousness. This delusion is a kind of prison for us, restricting us to our personal desires. Our task must be to free ourselves from this prison. And Einstein says the way we do it, according to Einstein, is by widening our circle of compassion to embrace all living creatures and the whole of nature. That is, of course, an important part of the process of recognizing what we are. But it's partial, because it ignores the fact that revelation is actually possible. It puts it all in sort of terms of our effort. And I just want to read you one more quote from another great intellect scientist, Erwin Schrödinger, the originator of the famous Schrödinger's cats experiment. Schrödinger said, "Inconceivable as it seems to ordinary reason, you and all other conscious beings as such are all in all. This life of yours that you are living is not merely a piece of the entire existence. It is in a certain sense the whole. It's just that this whole is not so constituted that it can be surveyed in one single glance." The recognition that this universe is a whole and that we are not just a part of it, we contain it all, is not an unknown idea to contemporary physicists. And we are going to accept that intimation that Schrödinger and Einstein gave us. And then we're going to attempt to kindle the actual realization, because we do have the opportunity in every moment to realize that what we believe is my perception is actually Goddess's perception. Remember that perception, any perception, includes an entire complex of affective qualities, of emotional qualities that accompany it. So perception is not just what we see with our senses. Recognizing your perceptions as being created by chitti will also involve playing with this aspect of concealment and grace. So what happens when you look at this as outside you? What happens if you think to yourself something like this? What if this room that I'm in is actually part of my awareness? What if the assumption that the room is outside me is simply an error? And closing your eyes very slowly, again, we're going to do a little meditative experiment. You're with the breath. And you very, very slowly and gently allow your right hand to begin to make movements. If your hands are in your lap, just allow the hand to come, one of your hands to slowly come off your lap. And if you're holding the phone, let it be your other hand. And just begin to focus on the very subtle sensations of the hand moving in space, moving against the air. Remove the idea of hand and air, and just feel the sensation of movement. And again, you just focus on the felt sense of your hand moving very slowly. Do you sense any absolute boundary or limit? Between the sensation of hand and the sensation of air. Without an idea of hand or air, let the movement happen. Allow your hand to come down to your thigh or to the arm of your chair. Your eyes are still closed. And again, remove the idea of hand or thigh or chair. And just feel the sensation. Just sense the sensation of touching. If you're just focusing on sensation, is there anything that tells you hand or thigh? Let your attention just gently move to the flow of air in and out of the body. Just focusing on the sensation of breath meeting the body, the nostrils, perhaps, or another part of the body. If you just focus on that sensation and remove any mental constructs about breath or nose or body. Is there any indication that the breath is coming from outside you? I hope that, first of all, I hope you enjoyed that meditation, which I personally find very relaxing. But also, were you able to notice that while doing this exercise, focusing on the sensation, that if you remove the concepts or the memories, you actually start to realize that there is just the experience of sensation, that there's not really any mechanism that differentiates inside or outside if there is no mental construct about it. And this process, which actually is a process that I first heard from Rupert Spira, who's a great non-dual teacher, this kind of process and the other processes that we do to deconstruct our normal experience is part of the process that begins to come alive for us as we begin recognizing who the real authors of our actions, who the author of our action really is. Kshema Raja says, if those with devotion constantly contemplate with firm determination the fact of their authorship of the fivefold act, that will actually reveal their divinity. In my experience, there are actually two possible ways to approach or to experience this recognition that the acts of perception and movement, etc., that are constituting your life experience are not being done by your egoic self. Ramakrishna used to say that there are two ways of escaping the illusion of separation or the illusion of Maya. One, he said, is to make yourself so small that you slip through the meshes of Maya's net. This is the way of humble surrender. So in this process, you would constantly say to yourself, I am not acting. It is Goddess who is acting through this body-mind. So in that sense, you dissolve your sense of egoic doership or your karma mala into the recognition that Chitti Shakti is doing everything through you. And we're going to talk about that later on. It's this attitude of she is doing everything, I am doing nothing. But the second method is, according to Ramakrishna, is that you make yourself so vast, so big, that you simply burst through the net of illusion. And this is the way of the bhavana that Kshema is talking about, having the awareness, I am the author of the fivefold act, not just as it's taking place through my body and perceptions. I am the author of the fivefold act that is manifesting this entire world. That's the recognition that Kshema is talking about. It's a big deal. So Sutra 10 is actually revealing that what you think is my perception and the limited perception is actually Chitti's perception, Shiva's perception, and not limited at all. You are the awareness that is creating reality moment by moment. I have a friend who years ago in the 1990s, she's a middle-aged Australian housewife. She told me this story that one day she was having afternoon tea with her husband at the kitchen table in her house in Sydney when she suddenly woke up to this realization and she saw how the entire experience that she was having was God experiencing her life. And she said, oh my God, she said to her husband, I just realized I'm God drinking tea. I've always loved that statement, I'm God drinking tea. And it was so clear, she said, that it was not the egoic I that was having that experience. It was not her egoic self, not her limited self. It's God as you. This is the kind of non-dual secret to recognize the divinity of every function that occurs in your life. And also to realize that you are not different from that one who is creating. And this, I would just want to say, this recognition is very different from having a kind of a psychic power, to intervene or change reality. Although it can bring, a lot of psychic powers. In other words, as you take ownership of the process of the fivefold act, you're also surrendering your sense of personal doership, your sense of karma mala. And, in this universe, the ultimate empowerment is to recognize that you're not a victim of reality, you're a creator. You are the creator of reality. But the paradox is that you can only really get this when you surrender your identification with the egoic self and agree to identify with awareness itself. because the ego is actually a phenomenon that appears quite far down on the stages of manifestation. Remember, the ego is like Tattva 16. It's one of the aspects of your experience that you as awareness can be aware of. You know what your ego feels like. You experience it all the time. Therefore, it's not you, because you as awareness can know it. This is an idea from Advaita, but it's very useful. You wouldn't be able to know it if you weren't bigger than it. If the ego were you, you wouldn't be able to know it with your mind. You know, we cannot know Chitti Shakti in her vastness with the mind. We can realize her. We can experience her. But we can't figure her out because she's beyond the mind. This is why I just want to say this. I feel like I have to say this because one of the common applications of tantric thinking, that is, of this idea that you're the creator of your universe, is in, you know, what's sometimes called the law of attraction or new thought. That's most famously described in that film, The Secret. And it's actually kind of a misleading idea because it doesn't actually demand that we close the gap between I as the ego am doing this and I as, you know, I in my realization of myself as divine am doing this. And, you know, one of the ways that this misapprehension about what it means to create our reality has played out, especially in the 80s and 90s, I think most of us have seen through this by now, but, you know, people would say, why did you create this experience? Or, you know, what did you hope to learn by creating cancer for yourself, for example, which is probably one of the least helpful things you can say to a person with cancer, despite the fact, of course, we do learn through illness and through, in fact, every situation of our life. But what Kshema is saying here is not that you're developing the power of being able to change reality through our affirmations. This is not what he's talking about. It's not to say that it's not possible and that it's not sometimes a good thing to do, especially if we're willing to follow our empowered affirmations with appropriate actions. But one of the ways that you can tell the difference between your attempts to be the creator of your world and the actual experience is by the level of power that arises in you. For instance, when you're working to manifest a desire, for example, when you're doing that process of saying, okay, the job I need is already mine, or, you know, making a vision board or any of those things that we do, often very helpful things. I'm not saying that they're wrong, including prayer, affirmation. I've experimented with all of these. However, the truth is that what Kshema is saying is that reality already has its own direction. Chitti is already manifesting a reality. You know how it's said that before you actually have the thought of wanting to move your arm, something in your brain is already moving your arm. In other words, the energy that controls reality is always happening at a level that the mind is not conscious of. So reality is flowing in a certain direction. Chitti gives you signals about her direction, and if you can discern those signals, you can literally flow within the seams of reality with the sense that you're being carried. And you can also know when it's better not to do anything because the energy is not flowing in a way that's going to be able to support your activity. Far more powerful, you know, a far more powerful way of working with this recognition or this truth that you are Chitti creating reality through the fivefold act is not to try to create personal realities through this insight, but to actually inquire, to use this teaching as the basis of inquiry and really begin to notice the clues that she begins to give you. So, for example, if you want to work with this understanding about yourself as the creator of the fivefold act, you might look at your life and ask, what am I creating now? In other words, look around at the people in your life, look around at your work, and ask, okay, this is my creation. This is the way that I, as Chitti Shakti, am manifesting a reality for my individual self. So what does it show me about myself? What does it show me about what I really want and what I really believe about myself? If you look at the interplay of people and events in your life, you might be able to see that it's a creation and that it's revealing something to you about yourself, that in fact your life is a kind of display of your personality and karma being projected outward so that you can look at it, so that you can experience it, so that you can learn from it. And we know this simply by trying to compare our experience, say, of our family with our sister's experience. You know, both you and your sister, or you and your brother, grew up in the same family, but her experience of it was actually quite different than yours. The family that was created through her perception is quite different, even though the characters all have the same names, etc. It's quite different from yours. So there's actually a lot to be learned by walking through your life, being willing to see how what you're experiencing through your senses and your organs of action is actually your creation. And I'm going to give you a dharana to do this week. However, it's actually much easier to see the process. It's much easier to recognize the process of creation when you look at it as it plays out through your thoughts and feelings. In other words, when you look at manifestation, sustenance, dissolution, concealment, and grace through your own thoughts and moods. And it's a very powerful way to do this in meditation. We're just going to spend a few moments interacting with our thinking process with this in mind, with this understanding. Again, close your eyes. And see if you can begin to notice the thoughts popping up in your inner screen. I often suggest when we're doing this practice that you give yourself a thought to focus on. So let's make the thought mantra. And let's make the thought Om Namah Shivaya Satatam, the first words of our Shiva mantra. Om Namah Shivaya Satatam. Just notice that thought comes up in the mind and identify it. Okay, this is manifestation. This is my creation. And notice how you sustain it for a while. And just notice, as you keep thinking this thought, this is maintenance or sustenance. And then allow the thought to dissolve. Let's work with another thought. The thought, I am tired. So as you create the thought, I am tired, and focus on it, do you notice that this I am tired thought has a particular effect on your inner state? Do you notice how when you're really holding this thought, it tends to crowd out other thoughts or ideas? And then if you dissolve this thought, I am tired, what do you experience? And again, you, some of you will recognize this process. We were doing it as we engaged with Sutra 5, looking at the creations of mind. So in terms of our sadhana, as we start to look at the creative process inside the mind, the way in which thoughts are constantly being created in the mind, being sustained for a while and then dissolving, we can actually start to work as creators with our own thoughts. When a thought comes up like, I don't like this person, you can notice this thought, you can notice its effect, and you can deliberately dissolve that thought and create another thought. In the process of recognizing the fivefold act as it takes place in your mind, you can begin to notice a couple of things. First, you can notice how thoughts conceal the subtle nature of consciousness as a pure field of undulating energy. You know, the thought arises, you focus on it, and it literally contracts your consciousness into that thought form. As you dissolve the thought, if you can dissolve the thought, you may notice that you get a glimpse of consciousness of your own mind field as energy. What you can do with recognizing the fivefold act in your mind is notice how thinking conceals the nature of pure mind and how you can give yourself grace by dissolving thoughts, by disidentifying with thoughts. Being able to recognize the fivefold act as your own thought process is one of the big keys to doing the sadhana of transforming your own mind so that it becomes a true mirror, so that it starts to show you what you really are. And as we practice looking at our experience and seeing the process of thinking and the process of interacting with the objects of our open-eyed attention as expressions of the fivefold act of God, something starts to shift and you do actually start to see what's doing it. One of my teacher friends will often say that the things that are happening in your life, including the parts that really seem to suck, is actually a display that's meant to teach you what you need to know to get free. In other words, that you will continue creating situations in your life, or let's say chitti shakti acting through your mind and senses, will continue creating situations in your life that will trigger issues, not to torture you, but to give you the opportunity to assimilate and dissolve the samskaras, the impressions that are creating limitation for you. And the more you can start to see this and work with it at the source level, the more you enter into the esoteric process of self-recognition. And that's what Sutra 11 is all about. So we're going to enter into a meditative process of Sutra 11 in just a moment, but let's first just sit quietly and take a few breaths. Again, see if you can feel the breath flowing into your body, across the front of the body and across the back. Feeling the breath as a subtle energy that interacts with the slightly denser but still subtle energy of what we ordinarily call the body. Without thoughts, without memories, without ideas, just let yourself experience this flow. Sutra 11 describes what Kshema calls the esoteric process of the fivefold act, meaning the way this process is used by a yogi, by somebody who is very seriously pursuing the sadhana of self-recognition, as all of you are, to look into our own mental and perceptual processes and recognize what they really are. So the Sanskrit in Sutra 11, it's a very beautiful Sanskrit, Habasana Rakti Vimarshana Bija Vastapana Vilapanastatani. It means, now I'm just going to take apart the words. Abhasana is equated with the process of manifestation or creation. Abhasana means to make shine, to illuminate, to make something appear. So the process, the subtle process of creation, as it's performed through our process of perception, is the experience we have of something appearing to us, whether inside the mind or in the so-called outer world. Rakta, second word. Rakta means, it's one of its meanings is attachment. It also means being dyed in or being immersed in. And rakta is equated to the process of maintaining a creation. Vimarshana, this is where it gets really interesting. Vimarshana means self-reflection. And it refers to the experience that we have when we see or feel or taste something. And in that experience, we turn back and become aware of ourselves as the one who's enjoying that experience, or not enjoying it, if the case may be. And the process of vimarshana, or self-reflection, in this subtle process of fivefold act as your process of perception, self-reflection is the way that the object in awareness dissolves. So we'll discuss that in a minute. Bija Vastapana. Bija means seed. Bija Vastapana means the settling of the seed. And it refers to the way in which every perception, if it has some charge attached to it, some attachment or aversion attached to it, creates an impression that stays in your consciousness in a seed form. In other words, you take in the residue of the impressions and you store them inside consciousness. They become concealed inside consciousness. And that impression, of course, joins other impressions and accumulates and becomes what we call the karmic backpack. And it's in the esoteric tradition, it is actually the accumulated impressions of past actions that conceal the nature of consciousness. So that's the process of concealment. And vilapanastastani translates as dissolving the seed of that impression, dissolving the samskara. And that's really what this verse, what this sutra is telling us how to do. It's telling us about the process by which our experience of life creates reactive impressions that then accumulate and hide the truth of who we are from us, and then points out that we as yogis have the capacity to work with our own limiting tendencies through self-inquiry and meditation and actually dissolve them. This is a sutra that is really a profound pointing out instruction about sadhana. And in the time we have, we're going to do the practice in just a moment. But I want to take a few minutes to point out the kind of esoteric backbone or the underpinning of this teaching, the background from which this teaching is given. Sutta 11 is based on a teaching from the esoteric Krama Tantra tradition, which means succession or order, is one of the three main schools of Northern Indian Tantra, along with Tridika, which is what this text is mostly identified with, and Kaula. The Krama tradition is a Shakta tradition, which means that the name of the absolute consciousness in the Krama tradition is Kali. So Krama sees reality as the play of goddess, and again, in Krama, Kali is always begins in union with her consort Shiva. So just as Shakti is not left out of the Trika tradition, even though it tends to call the absolute reality Shiva, in the same way Shiva is not left out of the Krama tradition, even though the Krama teachers call reality Kali. So it's always important to remember goddess and God, Shiva, Shakti, Kali, and Kali's divine consort, Shiva, are never separate. They're always together. So, and goddess Kali, though one, though she is goddess, the one goddess, she has innumerable aspects or facets which are part of her, but which manifest in different forms as the energies that act to create, sustain, dissolve, and conceal the nature of her universe. What this tradition says is that the experience of your own consciousness, the instruments of the mind, the instruments of knowledge, the senses, and the sense object, everything within experience, is being performed by these cohorts of goddesses. And remember, Shakti means goddess and it also means energy. So that these cohorts of goddesses are called the Shakti Chakras. Chakra means wheel or group. So the Shakti Chakras or the Shakti circles, of which there are many, are in this tradition the actors, so to speak, which are responsible for creation, dissolution, sustenance, concealment, and revelation, acting through your consciousness, through your mental operations, the intellect, attention capacity, and ego, through the sense organs, and they're also acting as the physical objects of senses. According to the Krama, your entire experience is the play of these Shakti Chakras, these goddesses. And what the Shakti Chakras are engaged in is a kind of vast work of art that they are creating, according to the tradition, for the enjoyment of Shiva, who is seated in the heart, being entertained by this extraordinary play that his consort Kali is producing through her Shaktis. So this is really a wildly radical point, because essentially what he is saying is that these energies, which remember are divine energies, are actually manifesting reality through the process of attention. That is to say, your attention, creation, is happening through your attention, through your capacity for focus. Remember the great New Age proverb, I cannot actually remembering it exactly, but the gist of it is what you focus on grows, what you pay attention to increases. And of course it has its corollary, what you resist persists. But the point is that when you attend to something, when you pay attention to something, you literally create it. You literally create it. What he says in the commentary is that when the sense goddesses, that's what he calls them, the sense goddesses, that is your capacities for seeing, hearing, tasting, etc., flow out from the heart and attend to something, that attention creates the object in full detail. For instance, right now, if you gaze at something in front of you, I'm looking at a tulip, which is sitting on the table in front of me, and this tulip has been there all along for the past 2 days, actually. I haven't exactly been paying attention to it. Every now and then, it sort of catches my eye. But at this moment, as I look into it, I begin to see the wonder of the tulip. It's got these red, almost like a flame in the center with fringes at the edge, and it's three shades of red, and then around it is a kind of a fringe of yellow. And this tulip, as I look at it, as I take it in, I see all these details that I wouldn't have seen. And what is happening, and if you're looking at something and following this practice, you notice that your consciousness is completely taking on the shape of what's in front of you. In my case, it's a tulip. It's come alive for me. It fills me. I'm immersed in it. And then there's something that happens that's actually quite inevitable. As I'm watching the tulip and becoming immersed in it, my attention will just naturally shift backwards. And I become aware of myself. I become aware of the fact that, oh, I'm enjoying looking at this tulip. And there's a moment when attention shifts inward and I become aware of the perception before the thought arises, oh, I'm looking at the tulip and it's red and yellow, you know, the thoughts that you have about it. In the moment that, in the course of a perception, you turn inside to experience yourself enjoying it, this is the process called vimarsana. And in that process of enjoying what you're seeing or hearing, the object temporarily dissolves. In other words, your attention goes from the tulip, in my case, into the experience of yourself enjoying it. And the tulip stops being so vivid. What becomes vivid is your own inner consciousness. So this self-awareness is this natural tendency to look inward during a process of perception is a part of the process. And if you're a yogi and you're really following this sequence as a sadhana process, you begin to recognize that every time you engage with any object of perception, you will eventually turn into yourself and experience the self-reflective, self-noticing recognition of the I, that is the I-ness, the I-consciousness that is the experiencer. And in that moment, if you can just cleanly allow yourself to dissolve the object of perception into the experiencer, then you are having an absolutely free experience of consciousness manifesting a world and then resolving it back into the self. Normally, when this process of turning back to the self arises, it immediately gets covered over with the thought. In other words, you remember, oh, this is happening to me, or oh, this is a tulip, or what a pretty tulip, you know, what a great piece of music, whatever it is, what a gorgeous painting. So normally the thought arises very quickly, and usually within the thought there's a judgment. And so the process of experiencing the perception is not completely clean, not completely clear. And here's the thing, if that experience creates a charge, that is, if your experience of, say, the tulip is, this tulip is so beautiful, I have to get another tulip, I want to have tulips around me all the time. In other words, an impression is created, which in this case is something like, I like tulips, which will come up again the next time you have an opportunity to buy flowers. But that impression could also be, you know, so-and-so said something and it hurt, it triggered something, it brought up a feeling of anxiety. So then the impression that is left in your consciousness of anxiety or fear or desire or negativity, this experience of an impression, an emotion or a reaction following the process of abhasana, rakta, vimarsana, the process of bringing something into consciousness through perception, holding it for a while, and then dissolving it in self-reflection. When there's been a charge, the impression that's left becomes a bija or a seed or a germ that will eventually lead you to acting from that impression and will actually become what in modern psychology we call the trigger. So in Tantra, the moment of relishing, that is, of turning back into yourself to experience enjoyment, is a crucial flashpoint for the realization of yourself as divine. In Sanskrit, the name for this moment is chamatkara, the experience of wonder or rapture. In other words, when you realize that you're enjoying something, if at that moment you allow yourself to have an aesthetic reaction to it, you know, like the man in the story I told earlier who was so immersed in the play that when the actor playing the swordsman cut off his finger, all he could think was, oh my God, is that a magnificent stroke of his sword? That chamatkara, which according to Kshema Raja and his guru Abhinavagupta, is the fundamental tantric experience of the world. It's like, ah, how amazing this creation. If you can manage to relish, to actually let yourself enjoy your perceptions in this way as amazing, then you are actually living a tantric life. And you can apply this really to any moment just by asking yourself, okay, in this moment, can I just relish this perception? And understand, doesn't really matter if the experience is pleasurable or unpleasurable, because the appreciation for the wonder of what life unfolds can be experienced even when what occurs is painful. The experience of relishing, which can be and hopefully is in many moments just a pure experience of beauty or wonder, since it's almost always accompanied by a reaction, and since the reaction is usually stored, and since that stored reaction or impression actually conceals your consciousness, then what a tantric practitioner needs to do, obviously, is find a way to dissolve that impression, hopefully right in the moment that it comes up. So we're going to spend next week dissolving impressions, just actually working with this sutra. But I think you pretty much know how it works. I mean, say you have a difficult conversation, and you come away with a charge, anger, fear, grief, self-doubt, whatever it is, an ordinary person will react by ruminating over it. It'll keep coming to mind. You'll keep revisiting it. You'll keep returning to it. Maybe you'll decide you never want to speak to this person again. A tantrika will immediately recognize, okay, I'm experiencing a toxic feeling. I'm experiencing negativity. I know a lot of you do this already. And having cultivated self-awareness, having cultivated that process of vimarsana, of self-reflection, you're able to notice when something has created a feeling of anxiety or negativity in your consciousness. And you'll know that it's time to dissolve the seed. As we do this kind of self-inquiry of noticing what the effect of a particular perception is and having the intention to turn every perception into an opportunity to relish pure experience and therefore being willing to dissolve especially the negative impressions, which is what Kshema Raja is also referring to, we actually learn to examine our own mental states, discern what it actually feels like to enjoy something egolessly, and how it feels when our enjoyment triggers something, triggers an attachment or aversion. I know that the way I first discovered this process was about 20 years ago, and it happened when I had begun to notice and actually get feedback on the fact that sometimes I would have a reaction to something, to a situation or to something someone said, and what would pop out would be a kind of a sharp, harsh tone of voice, which was, of course, an expression of frustration or anger. And one day I got that this was happening, that I was doing this, that it's not a skillful way to behave, and I decided that I wanted to master it. So I asked a friend, someone I was working with closely, if they would immediately tell me when they noticed this harsh tone coming into my voice. And, they started actually giving me this feedback in the moment, and after I'd received it a few times, I actually started to be able to do a kind of vimarsana process and notice the experience, what was going on in my consciousness, in my heart mind, right before I said something harshly. And I began to notice this particular feeling complex. We all have our own version of it, that it was kind of a mixture of anger, frustration, irritability. And As I started to notice the way those feelings felt, I began to discover this process, which I often teach, whereby I could feel the toxic state, the anxiety or anger, and just for a moment, I could feel into it, breathe into it, and then this is what I found myself doing. Then expand my awareness. That is, imagine a sense of space around the feeling and allow the feeling to soften. And I found that often if it was a very strong reaction, I would have to go off by myself and do it in meditation. But as I got better at it, it got to the point where I could actually stop, breathe, and do it in the moment. And in the tantric tradition that Kshema is teaching us, this process of dissolving samskaras, of dissolving the residue of a painful or negative impression or encounter, it's described with two Sanskrit words, hatha paka, like as in hatha yoga, which means, hatha paka means a sudden, intense, effortful process. And a sudden, intense, effortful process where you dissolve the samskara immediately, as if it popped or was suddenly digested. The other version is called alamgrasa. Alamgrasa, I'll give you these words, in the homework, which is a gradual swallowing. Alamgrasa means swallowing. It's like we allow our consciousness to swallow up the impression through a process of inquiry. The process that we've done a couple of times of holding a charged feeling and awareness and surrounding the bubble of space is an example of Alamgrasa. There are many ways of doing this, and again, we're going to do it in the homework, but they all start with a basic inquiry. Something feels uncomfortable. What is it? What is the feeling? And can I work with it? And, you know, this is, if you recall, this is not what we normally do. Normally what we do is we ignore an uncomfortable feeling and then we just act through that feeling. So if what a yogi does is notice when his consciousness is sinking or filled with a painful, negative feeling state, and then works with it, learns how to digest it. Swami Shantananda, in his book, The Splendor of Recognition, in his commentary on this chapter, talks about his own process, which is one that I sometimes do and that I think many of you sometimes do, which is that when he is working with a negative feeling, he will sit in meditation and offer it to the goddess. This is his version of Hatapaka. He'll just say, okay, I feel this anger. Whoosh, I offer it to the goddess as though I'm throwing it into the fire of the goddess. I do this too, and I think many of you do too, and it's actually very effective to do it as an imaginative process where you imagine a fire and you imagine yourself taking this negative emotion and dropping it into the fire, or you ask goddess to dissolve it. There are so many ways, so many strategies that we can come up with for allowing consciousness to assimilate or digest or swallow experience, to actually reduce the samskara, reduce the charge, not by pushing it down or suppressing it or, you know, trying to make it go away, but by actually opening our consciousness through one meditative method or another, so that the negative feeling is held, seen, experienced, and then dissolved. And I want to say that, because this is really the secret, and I want to invite you to work with this, once you have dissolved a samskara through a meditative process, do not return to it again. In other words, another layer of it may come up at another time, but if you keep thinking, okay, did that feeling really go away? Maybe I should do some more work on it. Or, you know, oh my God, that was a terrible feeling. I'm so glad that's gone. Once it dissolves, let it stay dissolved. And this is really the secret, honestly, of burning karmas in meditation. That is, your consciousness, chitti shakti, manifesting as your consciousness, is absolutely ready to support the process of dissolving your samskaras. She absolutely, especially as you practice with one of these or several of these methods, you'll experience this stuff dissolving, and you'll experience that it can be dissolved quicker and quicker and quicker. So the secret is not to doubt that it happened. These processes of tantric samskara dissolution is possible because, remember, you are a full conscious expression of Shiva Shakti, and as that, you have her full power available to you, acting through the particles of your own consciousness to digest everything that is keeping you from being free, to digest deep wounds and traumas and memories, not by searching them out and doing a psychoanalytic process on them, though there are times when that kind of process is helpful, but actually becoming aware of your consciousness as the subtle, loving, holding space that it really is. And then allowing consciousness to be the space that holds your pain, just the way a mother holds a child who's crying, or the way, in one wonderful image, the way a warming pan holds coals, so that your awareness becomes the space that, through what Carl Rogers called unconditional personal regard, can actually make the suffering of your old triggering wounds dissolve. And, of course, as this happens, you stop feeling like a victim, you stop blaming the world, you stop blaming yourself for your unhappiness. And you really become the master of your shaktis. This is why Upaladeva says that this is the path where poison becomes nectar. Because in this process, we learn to digest poison. And those of you who are lovers of Indian mythology probably at this juncture remember the famous story about Shiva and Kali, the story about how when the gods were churning the ocean of consciousness in order to bring up the nectar of immortality, in that process a terrible poison emerged which was threatened to destroy the world. And we could say that this poison is the hatred and negativity and, you know, suffering that is sometimes hidden in our consciousness from undigested suffering, and which may come up in the course of our process as these qualities are purified. So in that moment, Shiva swallows the poison. But Kali, the goddess Kali, when she sees her husband swallowing the poison, she puts her hand around his throat to keep the poison from going down into his heart. And she holds his throat in her hands until the poison is dissolved. So this is the gesture of Alamgrasa. The goddess power within consciousness holds the space within which the poisons of our lives can be dissolved and digested. And this is how her grace works. This is the esoteric teaching at the heart of this sutra, which is literally a pointing out instruction as to how we can free ourselves through the grace of consciousness, through this extraordinary process of dissolving our karmic impressions and traumas and wounds, through the embracive power of Goddess. So you can close your eyes. We're going to do a short version of a process that in the Tibetan tradition is called Tonglen, which is a way of working with the obstructing qualities in our consciousness and allowing them to dissolve into Goddess. And we'll do it as a visualization. So just sit. We just have a few moments to do this. Just sit and allow yourself to be with the breath. Now, as you sit, see if you can bring into your own consciousness, bring into awareness the sense of being a small, limited, suffering person. See if you can bring up into your consciousness the gestalt of the feeling of limitation, of contraction, of being a mala-covered samsara. And it might be a sense of anxiety or of anger or of despair, just experience yourself as limited. Now imagine that behind you, the goddess consciousness is appearing as this vast, spacious presence that is embracing you from behind, that's literally holding you from behind. Maybe she has a form, maybe not. But as you inhale, feel that the inhalation draws the contracted part of you in through the heart and offers it into the embracive presence of goddess behind you. And then as you exhale, feel that the goddess chitti, the goddess consciousness, breathes love and spaciousness through your heart and into the contracted feelings that you have gotten in touch with. And just continue to breathe in the feelings of limitation in through your heart into the presence at your back. And then to exhale her love and peace and spaciousness through your heart so that it holds your contracted feelings and fills them with the love that Goddess wants to offer you. And you may experience this blessing as love, as tenderness, as peacefulness, as softness. As you're breathing in feelings of contraction, anxiety, smallness, limitation, through the heart, offering them into the spacious presence of Goddess behind you. And then breathing the sense of blessing back through your heart so that your consciousness begins to be more and more irradiated by the felt sense of Goddess who is living as you, who is loving you in every moment, who is holding you in every moment. Breathe your contraction into her and allow her to breathe back her spacious love. This gesture of feeling any squibs or sparks of contraction, not ignoring them and not getting lost in them, just feeling them, breathing them into the goddess at your back, and then breathing her blessing back into yourself with the exhalation. This process will allow you to assimilate contraction, free it, liberate it, and more deeply experience yourself irradiated by that one who is living as you, through you. Have a beautiful evening, a beautiful day, a beautiful week. The audio will be available tomorrow and your homework will come at the end of the day tomorrow. So much love, blessing. Thank you. Namaste.